From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. When it comes to making sure that women have access to abortion and other forms of reproductive health care, Illinois has some of the strongest laws in the country. But those laws might not be enough to ensure access in the face of a nationwide court order that restricts abortion services. Right now, there's an ongoing legal fight in federal court to ban or severely limit the use of the medicine mifepristone. This is part of a true two-drug combination, the other is misoprostol, which taken together are meant to end pregnancies. Earlier this month, a federal judge in Texas issued a ruling that revoked the Federal Food and Drug Administration's approval of mifepristone, which dates back to the year 2000. Then a federal appellate court partly overturned that but kept other restrictions in place. And finally, on Friday night, the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in and issued an order basically restoring the status quo before that first judge's ruling, effectively allowing mifepristone to remain widely available for now. Because we've been talking about preliminary emergency orders, and while those have been undone, the underlying legal challenges continue. Joining us now to unpack all of this is Leslie J. Regan, professor of history at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and author of When Abortion Was a Crime, Women, Medicine, and Law in the United States, 1867 to 1973. It's just been published with a new preface. Professor Regan, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also with us today are two reporters who have been covering this story in Illinois. Angie Leventis-Lurgos is a staff writer at the Chicago Tribune, and Kristen Schorsch is health and county government reporter at NPR station WBEZ. Angie and Kristen, thanks to both of you for being here today as well.
Thanks for having us.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. We want to know, what was your reaction to this decision from the U.S. Supreme Court? Do you think abortion pills should be available in all 50 states? And how do you think the Supreme Court's ruling will affect the ongoing political divide over abortion in America? Again, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today. Professor Regan, I want to begin with you. I mentioned the drug mifepristone in the introduction. Tell us a little bit more about it and specifically how it fits into the history of abortion in America.
Well, mifepristone and the two pill combination were approved by the FDA in 2000. So in the long history, it's fairly recent. And there had been decades of its use safely in Europe and Japan. So it's been used safely for a long time. So one thing that's similar to the past is women using some kind of medication or herbs to induce their own miscarriages, which goes back to the colonial era before the United States existed, and in early America under common law, which was legal to induce their own miscarriages. And that continued when it was criminalized in the late 19th century. So that is kind of similar to what people did in the past of bringing back their menses, because this is really what this does is if your period's late and you're pregnant, you bring back your period and induce a miscarriage. So in that way, it's very similar. But really until this, through the period of legal abortion, we've relied on surgical abortions and the vacuum aspiration, not using medications. And when it was illegal, a lot of times people didn't know what those things were, if they were going to work, and they were sold a lot of things that were actually quite dangerous.
Interesting. I've heard some commentators say that when the Dobbs decision came down last summer, sort of overturning the Roe versus Wade precedent that had been in place for 50 years, the constitutional right to abortion, when that was ended, that these drugs in particular were the reason America was not likely to go back to the sort of, so to speak, coat hanger days of abortions. What do you think about that?
The idea is that these are, they're available, they're safe. We know they have, so you don't have to go back to, surgical, practices solely and illegal, you know, underground, practitioners. But that assumes the availability of the pills, And what we're seeing right now is the effort by the anti-abortion forced birth movement and some parts of the legal system to make it impossible to get these pills because they're sent through the mail. And he had to go back to, he's using the Comstock Law from 1873, which was written to ban pornography and anything to do with preventing pregnancy, contraceptives, abortion, and in using the US postal system to distribute information and products. And that is quite interesting and horrifying and ironic because even if it still exists, it hasn't been in use for, you know, decades. And contraceptives and abortion have been legal, and information about them are certainly legal. So this effort to shut down all information, we went through that in a period of censorship, and out of that came the original early birth control movement in the 1900s.
Yeah, interestingly, you're talking about the legal basis for the judge's
The
ruling.
com yeah,
Yeah,
the Comstock Law.
Comstock.
So that's historical. But in terms of going back to quote unquote coat hangers, I think regardless, right now we have a system where the law is different depending on where you live and who you are and how much money you have. And not everybody, even if the medication abortion is available and you can get it through the mail or get it through, you know, doctors that travel out of state, not everybody can get that information. Not everybody knows about it. Not everyone will have the money. And so the most vulnerable people, or people who discover they're pregnant later on, I mean, some of those people will turn to various methods, trying to do it themselves or finding other people, and some of those people won't be safe. And so, yeah, I think it's very likely that we will have various kinds of providers. We probably already do actually have people providing illegally. I mean, in a way, we hope so. We hope there's safe providers providing abortion care, even though it's been banned.
I'll just refer listeners if you want to learn more about that history. We did an entire program last year on the sort of Jane operation in Chicago and what it was like in Illinois, particularly before Roe. Angie Leventis-Lurgos, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You've been reporting on how abortion clinics have been responding to this latest round of legal challenges. What have they been doing? How have they been reacting and sort of preparing for what's coming?
So far, there have been no changes on the ground. Mifepristone's still available in Illinois. You can still get a medication abortion, and there's been a huge surge in the number of patients that have been coming from out of state since the decision, and since a lot of states have either banned or highly restricted abortion. There have been movements to prepare and have alternatives in place if at some point mifepristone isn't available. Some Democratic governors in other states have started stockpiling both medications and the two-drug regimen. In Illinois, some providers have been discussing, if needed, to go to a misoprostol-only regimen where they would give multiple doses over the course of maybe 12 hours, depending on the patient. And that's considered a slightly less effective method, but it is still considered an effective method. It's used in other countries where mifepristone isn't available. So they're looking at that as a potential alternative. But for now, the status quo is still intact in Illinois.
Yeah, effective. It's used in Europe. It is, I've also read, though, more unpleasant for the person taking the medicine and going through just the misoprostol alone.
I've heard that. I haven't had any sources tell me that definitively. So I don't know if that depends on patient to patient.
Yeah, fair
I
enough.
have heard that it can be a longer process and it might be more difficult if a patient's traveling than if they were able to get the medicine via the mail or come to the border and go to an office and pick it up and then go home. So it might be a more trying experience, especially if someone has to travel long distances, which we're seeing more and more.
Kristen Schorsch, People who support abortion rights have long talked about Illinois being a haven, much to the chagrin of people who oppose abortion rights. But you've been speaking with abortion rights advocates, and I think what these federal cases are showing is that no amount of laws that Illinois can pass, there are some things that it may not be able to overcome if there are federal legal changes in this regard. What have you been hearing from abortion rights advocates here?
Well, I mean, kind of like Angie just said, they really want patients to know that nothing has changed in Illinois, that abortion with medication is still legal and available. I did kind of want to circle back on some of the comments too. I mean, so I've interviewed a number of abortion providers even before the SCOTUS decision came out on Friday, making mifepristone still widely available. One of the things they're preparing for is yes, miso only, but what they're telling me is that, and there's a large body of evidence to support that, it is only effective in the 80-85% range. So that is still very effective, right? But that's still thousands of people that might not work on. So when you think about people who are coming here from out of state, needing transportation, needing childcare, needing a hotel room, perhaps, because miso only does take perhaps a full day. And they'd have to stay overnight. A lot of the abortion clinics are preparing for more inpatient procedures as well, because they're thinking that some patients are going to be worried that miso only, if it doesn't work, they're going to have to come back. And that can be also highly traumatic, right? So there's a lot of things they're preparing for, but they're being very steadfast, I'd say, the abortion rights advocates here, about the fact that they want people to know mifepristone is still available and that they do feel protected because Illinois is one of more than a dozen states that are part of this Washington lawsuit, in which the FDA is not allowed at this point to change any access to mifepristone.
Angie, before the Supreme Court issued its order, I should say, before the order last Friday night, you did speak with someone from the Pro-Life Action League. What did they have to say?
Their position is that medication abortions are potentially dangerous and traumatic for patients. That's not the position that the body of obstetricians and gynecologists in the United States have put out. That's not the position of abortion providers, but that is their view and their rule, their feeling.
Yeah, and it's a movement that obviously has not had a great deal of success legislatively in Illinois. Professor Regan, I wonder if you can talk about that and you know, their, where the sort of anti-abortion movement comes down on this latest sort of legal fight.
Well, they're the source of the legal fight and effort to make the medication abortion unavailable and to ban it. And part of this, of course, is in response to the victory of overturning Roe and banning abortion in, we expect to be about half the states, and then discovering, well, actually, people still will go get abortions. They still need to find ways to end pregnancies. And one way that's very effective is medication abortion and being able to order it through the mail or, travel to obtain it. And also, since this is now about half of the people who terminate their pregnancies use medication abortion, which means it has to be very early in pregnancy. This would be a great way to really shut down availability of abortion across the entire country. And go against what the majority of Americans want. They want abortion to be legal. They want it to be accessible. And of course, this is not a decision that other people should be making for individuals.
Kristen, we need to take a break in about a minute, but I'm just wondering, so what, there's been this sort of pause. There was this concern based on that federal judge's order out of Texas. The U.S. Supreme Court reversed that. What would that have meant if it had stood briefly here in Illinois for access to this sort of medical abortion?
If the Supreme Court decided differently, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, I guess I'm just saying if the Supreme Court had not stepped in the way it did, would these medicines still be available in Illinois?
Well, yes, because the appellate court decision was about the case out of Texas that wanted the to essentially invalidate the FDA's approval of mifepristone, because Illinois is part of a separate lawsuit in Washington. And that judge, that federal judge in that case, said the FDA could not change anything. So you have these dueling lawsuits, which of course is creating a lot of confusion. But essentially, you know, before SCOTUS stepped in on Friday, Illinois was protected by that Washington lawsuit and was still providing mifepristone unchanged.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We will have a conclusion of this conversation when we come back. If you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455. If you have questions about the legality of medication abortion here in Illinois, again, 800-222-9455. We'll be talking about what the future might hold and, again, how Illinois groups are preparing for that. After a short break, this is the 21st Show. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the ongoing legal fights over abortion pills. Mifepristone is part of a two-drug combination. The other is misoprostol, which taken together end pregnancies effectively in most cases. There was a series of legal decisions. First, one that basically prevented this drug from being accessed anywhere. There was another appellate court decision. Eventually, the U.S. Supreme Court stepped in and said, we're going to hold the status quo while these legal fights continue. We're talking about all this with Leslie Regan, who's a professor of history at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also the author of When Abortion Was a Crime, Women, Medicine, and Law in the United States, 1867 to 1973. That book has just been republished with a new preface. We're also talking with Kristen Schorsch of public radio station WBEZ and Angie Leventis-Lurgos, who is with the Chicago Tribune. Both of them have been covering this issue. 800-222-9455 as we are wrapping up this conversation. Somebody brought up the point earlier, and Kristen, I'll ask you about this. Why Illinois clinics are not stockpiling these medicines? I mean, these legal fights are still ongoing. It's difficult to say what the Supreme Court will eventually rule on this issue.
I mean, I think that's a good question. I haven't asked every single clinic. I do know, so Illinois, or Planned Parenthood of Illinois, which obviously is a really large abortion provider in the state, one of the largest, they told me they are not stockpiling, that they are essentially though keeping an eye on supply. Like they've been in touch with the manufacturer. They want to make sure that there is no interruption supply. But I think that a lot of providers feel protected by that Washington lawsuit, by essentially the judge saying the FDA cannot change access to mifepristone. And also I think that they feel protected in a state that is very blue with a governor who's very, you know, obviously very much supports reproductive rights. So, I mean, I think that's a good question. And I think that what we're seeing too is just a lot of confusion and a lot of whiplash. I mean, perhaps the SCOTUS decision, I don't know, might maybe change some things going forward. But when I was talking to providers, they were not necessarily stockpiling mifepristone. They were essentially keeping an eye on things and feeling protected by that Washington lawsuit.
Professor Regan, as you survey the entire sort of legal landscape around abortion in 2023, what is still at stake? What are you watching for in the months and years ahead?
That's tough. Well, I see people continuing to both support reproductive rights and reproductive justice and legal abortion in the states, and a continuing struggle actually to overturn those bans. through elections, but also through breaking laws. And probably more of that has to become more visible. That's how we got to Roe versus Wade. And the legalization of abortion was that people openly broke the laws. The clergy consultation service, clergy members sending people to abortion providers, to doctors, doctors declaring that they were performing abortions and that they were legal, and some of them being arrested, but also standing up collectively, and then really prosecutors dropped it. So I think that has to become more visible and more of a sense from providers that they can be safe if they act together. The other thing I just want to mention locally is, you know, colleges are they provide condoms and contraceptives and cough syrup. They do all kinds of things, right? But they do provide contraceptives regularly. And I know at UIC in Chicago, they are also providing medication abortion, as they as really they should, given the population. Some people will get pregnant and need to terminate. And yet at Urbana-Champaign, I understand from students, our healthcare center at McKinley does not provide medication abortion. And I think this is one of the things I understand from students that they are trying to change. And it makes a difference, not just for students, but for the entire town and for all those people who now have to come to Illinois from the surrounding states because it's been banned in their state. So that's the kind of thing I expect to see is local efforts, state efforts, and some of it we'll know about, and some we, it's very small on a small scale.
Yeah.
But I don't expect this to last forever. The question is how long it lasts.
You mean this, meaning the sort of...
the bans.
The bans.
Yeah, I don't expect Dobbs to last forever. I mean, I don't think, I really do not see us returning to precisely the past. Much of it's the same, potentially, in the way that people are being criminalized and incarcerated. But I don't think it will take 100 years to change these laws, to change those laws.
Yeah, it's interesting, and maybe this is a conversation for another day, but I heard a commentator yesterday talking about, you know, this problem that a lot of people who do strongly believe that abortion should be outlawed everywhere, their political candidates keep losing in the United States. But yeah, maybe that's a conversation for another day. Angie Leventis-Lurgos, I think I'm going to ask the last question to you, and we kind of touched on this earlier, but just to reiterate, what are clinics in Illinois telling clients with appointments as people are maybe just getting little snippets of the news and hearing that things are changing nationwide?
As of now, no change. You can still access mifepristone. If you have a medication abortion appointment, you can still come in. Or if that was going to be done by telehealth, that's still available. Providers that were doing medication abortion by mail, that's still available as well. So for now, no change.
All right. Angie Leventis-Lurgos, Kristen Schorsch, and Professor Leslie Regan, thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.